The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
All righty, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday edition of TalkBack. I am Peter Christian. That's Mr. Nick Christensen right over there. Good morning, Mr. Nick. How you doing, man?
Good morning.
And we have a full house today, ladies and gentlemen. We have our friend Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council. And one of his and our favorite guests is Peter Stark. He's back with us. He's an adventure historian and author. And how many years you've been doing this? I finally got it right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm trying to figure it out too. So just what it is, I'm trying to figure out.
Well, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, it's delighted to be here.
It is good. It's good to have you. And so, gentlemen, we have lots to talk about today. And of course, the phone lines will be open, obviously. And if you have a question or a comment for Peter Stark as he goes through his, I'm not sure exactly which era we're going to be going through at this point. Well,
we're doing it all. So.
Yeah, okay.
We're starting with the origin story, and okay. Then we're going to come into the future.
We're going to start with Og the caveman.
Yeah. Yeah. You bet. Yeah. A little before that, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. So, gentlemen, the floor is yours. We got about 3 minutes before our first break, so let's go ahead.
Well, and I think we need to make this caveat that you've got three seniors here right now, so if there are gaps and silence, it's because one or all three have forgotten what they may want to say. So we will do our very best to keep the music flowing and the conversation going.
That's why Nick is here.
Keep us on track.
Exactly.
So we're going to have a couple of topics here today, but we're going to start with maybe for the first half hour, because I thought it was very timely given our pending relationship with our neighbors to the north, the Canadians, and tariffs. Hard to ignore, again, that this is in the news. Montana has a major border, as well as a number of our states. And it's no secret that when you have tariffs and there's a battle over it, somebody's going to be a little bit PO'd. And at the end of the day, ultimately, it comes out of Peter and, Bob's and Nick's and everybody else's pocket when all is said and done. But there's nothing new about this story, too. And Peter, as a historian and somebody that's often talked about our history and origin story, the Whiskey Rebellion. Whiskey has had a long, long history in our American history. And I think I find it both funny, sad, and complicated in terms of what has that history been. But let's just talk a little bit about the Whiskey Rebellion, because it was really about a tax. It was about a part of the country which was considered the Western region.
Western frontier,
thank you, which was Western Pennsylvania, which is laughable when you think about today.
Pittsburgh, center of rebellion.
Yeah. So, Peter, give just a little kind of background on the whiskey tax and whiskey rebellion, because at that time, Americans loved to drink. In fact, they were consuming copious quantities of alcohol, much even more than today.
Yes. And the Brits were even worse.
Oh, God. Right.
Probably because you couldn't drink the water, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, at one point, I was doing researching a book. I can't remember which one. But I looked up what the British Royal Navy allotted for their, their sailors per day. And it's like, literally, it's like a gallon of beer. And I think it's 4 ounces of whiskey. And I'm not sure. You might have got whiskey after every four-hour shift. So, it was sort of the alcohol, it was a way to keep those guys going.
A calming factor.
I had never asked this question, but was the content, the alcohol content, stronger, less, or diluted?
Well, it was rum, actually. No, okay. Strong, very strong.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the beer, I'm not, it'd be interesting to know how strong that was.
Yeah.
But for the whiskey, we're going to take a break.
Yes.
And then we'll talk about how this whiskey came to be.
Right. You bet. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Hey, it's the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio on TalkBack. Peter Stark and Bob Seidenschwartz. And we will continue. The phone lines are open, by the way, at 406-721-1290. We're coming right back after this.
Thank you.
TalkBack is sponsored.
Dennis Bragg with the Town Square weather. A slight chance of rain between noon and 3 today. A 20% chance. Those could include thunderstorms after 3. Areas of smoke at times, too. Mostly sunny with highs between 90 to 95 degrees. Light and variable winds. A chance of precipitation about 20% continuing through the evening with overnight lows in the 50s. Thursday's forecast, a nearly identical repeat of that. Skies will clear Thursday night. Friday looks pretty good with sunshine and highs in the low to mid 80s. A slight chance of shower Saturday. Sun on Sunday.
And author and gentlemen, let's go for it.
Yeah, so whether you're a teetotaler or a tipper, this show is for you for the first half hour or so. So please continue, because this is really a fascinating, and it has all the implications of tariffs and taxes and arguments and disagreements, which we could fast forward to today, and you totally, wouldn't even know the difference.
Totally.
So continue, please.
So think of the founding of the country, you know, 1776. At that point, the first settlers were just kind of pushing over the Appalachian Mountains into the wilderness, the western wilderness, which is like Ohio and Pennsylvania. And as they did, in increasing numbers, they started farms. And from the Indians, actually, they learned how to grow corn. And corn is a Native American, it's actually a grass. It originated as a grass called teosinte in Mexico. And so the settlers are now planting corn. And, you know, this is their crop. And they want to sell this crop, you know, for money. And they don't have any way to get their crop to market, because they have to go over a mountain range to get it to any, you know, good market, in wagons and long, rough roads. And so what they start doing is they start, you know, boiling down that corn and then distilling it and end up with whiskey. And whiskey is a lot more easy, it's easier to transport, and it's worth a whole lot more money than a bushel of corn.
And it doesn't spoil.
And it doesn't spoil. And so, you know, it was really common in the Western frontier. You know, now we're talking 1780s or early 1790s. And it's really starting to get more and more settled, more people coming over. But distilling whiskey was a very common practice. Whiskey was a very popular drink, and it was, you know, worth a lot of money, especially when you send it back east.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, it was like right after the Constitution was, you know, passed, 1789, 1790, 1791, the baby U.S. government is starting to think, well, like, how are we going to pay for this thing?
Yeah, we're deeply in debt as a country.
From the Revolutionary War.
Yeah. We have bondholders that had lent money.
Yes.
Think about that today in terms of the bondholders out here in the U.S. and our debt. And they had to start finding a way to pay these guys back, or you lose your ability to move forward the agenda of this nascent federal government.
Exactly. And I think I could be corrected on this, but I think at that point the only source of revenue was tariffs on incoming goods.
Tariffs were coming in
from abroad. Yeah. So, but you know, that wasn't enough. And so the tax people, and I think Hamilton and, you know, people really thought about money, are saying, like, okay, where are we going to raise some money to pay for the Revolutionary War? And then they start thinking about all these farmers out there, you know, brewing up this valuable whiskey, and they're, you know, selling it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come up, the federal government comes up with a whiskey tax. And it's one thing to impose a whiskey tax, and it's another thing to enforce a whiskey tax.
And collect the tax. And do you want to be the guy that has to go out into Western Pennsylvania with all these guys that are pissed off, hammered,
and heavily armed
and collect something that nobody wants to pay?
And they are way out there. So,
yes, right.
You know, whatever. If you're a tax collector out there, you are... You know, you are on a very thin limb, basically.
Yeah.
We do have a caller. Let's get right to it. Jeff is on with us. Jeff, good morning. You're on with Bob and Peter. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, gents. Good morning, Montana. Yeah, there's so much to talk about this. You know, it wasn't just the sailors. The monks in the Middle Ages, one of the attractions for the monasteries was that you were guaranteed 2 quarts of beer, one in the morning and one in the evening. So, you know, that beer was food back then. It was what you did with the grain to keep it from spoiling. So it was a staple of life.
That totally makes sense. And also, when you think about it, you know, there are so many monasteries that ended up, you know, like the Trappists in Belgium, famous today for their, you know, brewing beer. And so many monasteries were making wine. And, you know, that was part of the deal. You know, you were cloistered, but, you know, you kind of had all you could to eat and drink. So that was a benefit.
So, Jeff, if you want to just hang on. I always, when I hear this conversation, I'm always asking myself, life was pretty short and brutal.
Right.
You didn't have the internet. You didn't have all the distractions and cable and satellite and, you know, that we have today. So you worked from sunup to sundown. You came home. You hope you had a good hot meal. And the one distraction was alcohol to different degrees. So I don't know if that was the lubricant that kept us going, but it definitely played a significant role in what then comes with rebellions.
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, my grandparents met over neighboring stills in central Minnesota.
There you go.
They grew a corn crop called Minnesota 13. It was a hybrid that was perfectly adapted, and it made the best whiskey. So there's a long story about that in Stearns County, but they were supplying Al Capone and Canada with whiskey. And there's all sorts of stories on how to, you know, the best recipes and that sort of thing. So my one regret is I don't have my grandfather's recipe. So.
Okay. Now, hey, Jeff, I have to ask you. So are you descended from Scandinavian bootleggers? Is that what you're telling us?
No, actually, Germans, Austrians came over from
good people too.
From the wine country of Austria. So that's where we're from.
Well, that makes more sense. They've got more distilling and brewing experience down there.
I'll just end with really quick. Our Canadian neighbors, with the tariffs going on, I just saw a news report that one of the areas was shocked. To find American wine on the shelves and demanded that it be removed immediately. So
wow!
I think that's been going on for a while, and now it's really going on.
Jeff, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Jeff. Coming
up on a break. Phone lines are open. If you have a question, give us a call 406-721-1290. We'll be back with more of Talk Back statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
You've just had an act.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Women experience unique life stages such as pregnancy or menopause
that can increase their risk of developing cardiovascular disease over the course of their lifetime.
But here's the good news. Women have the best resource.
We have each other.
Visit GoRedForWomen.org today to learn more.
Welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. Good to have you along. And again, it's the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio, along with special guest Peter Stark, adventure historian and author. And Nancy is kind enough to wait. And Nancy, go ahead. You're on, please.
Yeah, morning, Gorin. Good morning, Appalachia. What a fascinating topic and region in our country. Of course, we just lost Dolly Parton. Rest in peace. She was from East Tennessee. What a fabulous family heritage she came from. But, my ancestors went into Kentucky. They were from Scotland in the 1700s, and they were actually neighbors of the Boone family. And my ancestors fought with Squire Boone, Daniel's older brother, in the Indian Wars.
Wow.
But I think that there's an estimated 2,500 bootleggers still left in our country. I think this is a craft and an art form, and it really should be protected. These men and women should be protected by law. I mean, it's just a tradition.
It's
and
like,
we're
going to
drink no matter what. Yeah, we're going to drink no matter what. But even George Washington, he distilled something like 40,000 gallons of whiskey at Mount Vernon. And, you know, we have a fascinating tradition in our country also, a toast. And, of course, we know that the early whiskeys and beers were filled with sediment, and the colonists used to put a piece of toast in the bottom of their drinking mugs and tumblers, and that would help catch some of this stuff, and they would just drink the best at the top. But it's a great subject that you're talking about today, and I know that people are taking interest in Appalachia, and it's about time. And it's just the hillbillies. I just love them, everything about them.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Thank you, Nancy.
Yeah, that's
Nancy, you've got a little bit of a rebellious streak in you there, girl. I like that. You're a little spicy.
Well, it's also to think of the do we have a call?
Oh, yeah.
I just want to make one comment.
Go ahead, please.
With Nancy, I mean, great point about these, you know, there's a very much independent-minded character out there, and it's partly because of Scotch-Irish, and they were border people, very rebellious in Britain, England was trying to rein them in. And now they're in they moved to the Appalachians. And this, you know, distilling in your own private distillery is a very independent thing to do. And, yeah, of course, we'll get to the part about what happens when the revenuers come in. but I kind of like Nancy's idea of saying, well, these distilleries out there should be protected and preserved. And, you know, it's a cool concept. And, you know, in a way it would be like heritage whiskey, you know, from the founding of our country, basically.
But then the feds would have to come in the state because they're going to have to regulate the health issues. So how do we keep their independence and, you know, marry that with what would then be legitimate health issues about how are you making your whiskey?
Well, the whiskey, it has enough alcohol. There's not a health. Right. There's not a health issue.
Right.
Well, I mean, maybe there could be a heavy metal issue.
Yeah, right.
Okay, next caller.
Fascinating twists and turns, but I know we have a call up here.
All right, this is Bruce. Bruce, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, guys. Whiskey is a topic near and dear to my heart.
good to hear from you.
Yeah, and plus Peter Stark has my last name, but
oh, cool. We're brothers somewhere.
In whiskey.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, my buddy flew me out to Cincinnati in June, so we spent 6 days checking out the bourbon industry down there in Kentucky. And it is an amazing industry because there's all these little support businesses that are keyed to it. And you don't know the extent of it until you check it out. And according to the experts that I listen to, if I can quote Dave, Montana was a hotbed of smuggling whiskey during Prohibition up into Canada.
I've heard the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, and the only thing we got out of Canada in return is crappy whiskey, so I just like to say, keep it American and keep it good.
Well, now, I was thinking, I knew there was a whiskey trail up there in northern Montana. You know, I was always thinking the whiskey was coming from the Canada into the U.S. Because I don't think Prohibition existed in Canada. So, but maybe it was going the other way. And I think, I think there was a whiskey trail actually earlier that had to do with the Indian trade. I mean, there've been a lot of whiskey trails, but, great point. I mean, there's a very, as you know, Nancy was saying and you, Bruce, that it's really part of our heritage, and it's so woven into the fabric of how this nation was founded. And, you know, if you like to drink whiskey, it's pretty tasty, too.
All right. And you make your own. What the heck? Exactly. We're going to come right back. We have George waiting on the phone and several other phone lines open. If you want to get into this conversation and if you want to say, hey, pardon the phrase, I'll drink to that. Just give us a call, 406-721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Again, our guests in the studio today, the Montana World Affairs Council, we've got Bob Seidenschwartz and Peter Stark, one of our favorite guests, adventure historian and author, and I'm anxious to find out what he's working on right now. As a matter of fact, as we can move through our two-hour conversation with Peter Stark. So if you'd like to get in on the conversation, we're going to get George's call and hopefully yours. After we come back from this break, our number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And if you just joined us, this is Talk Back, and we are statewide right now on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We're looking forward to hearing from you when we come back from the break right after this.
In a world of
Dennis Bragg with the Town Square weather, a slight chance of rain between noon and 3 today, a 20% chance. Those could include thunderstorms after 3, areas of smoke at times too, mostly sunny with highs between 90 to 95 degrees. Light and variable winds, a chance of precipitation about 20% continuing through the evening with overnight lows in the 50s. Thursday's forecast, a nearly identical repeat of that. Skies will clear Thursday night. Friday looks pretty good with sunshine and highs in the low to mid 80s. A slight chance of shower Saturday, sun on Sunday.
Enough already.
We can do more.
Enough already. We can find a cure.
Enough already.
We can do better for our kids.
Enough already. We are relying on you.
We can come together to support Children's Cancer Research Fund, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending childhood cancer that is on the front line of breakthroughs. Because
it's enough already.
Go to childrenscancer.org today.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
All right, we're back on Talk Back. Glad to have you along this morning. The Montana World Affairs Council, our special guest, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz hosting, and Peter Stark, adventure historian and author, and folks are waiting on the phone to talk with you. George is up next. George, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Hey, thanks for having Peter Stark back on. I really enjoy history. I like reading history. Yeah, you bet. Really enjoy reading it. Read a chunk of your books. I think I saw you speak at the library once regarding your book. So I'm looking forward to hearing about a new book you might be reading. Let's see, I'm from Pittsburgh. And, yep, and I can vouch for the alcohol in that town growing up. And, you know, it has a two-edged sword, as we all know. There's right, a good side right. and bad side to alcohol. Anyway, yeah, the Pittsburgh is the beginning of the Ohio River, and that's where Lewis and Clark began. And a lot of your books really got me going on the whole history train there, because it's what a fascinating story. And the Lewis and Clark come right through our neighborhood here in Montana, and I really enjoy your books.
Thanks. Well, and it's a long way from Pittsburgh to Montana. Both for Lewis and Clark.
Yeah,
and
it is.
I don't know if you paddled the whole way, but how did you get out here?
Oh, how did I get out here? No, I did not paddle. I came out in 97 here in Montana. I spent some time in Alaska and that kind of thing. And all my friends said, you would really like Montana.
Well, so you're kind of a frontier guy, you know, that Western Pennsylvania, Alaska, and Montana, they're all sort of a parcel, and that makes sense. But yeah, Pittsburgh, it's so interesting. I mean, it's cool that you're a native, and you know way more about Pittsburgh than I do, but it did play a really central part in the early days of our nation as being this a remote outpost, and it was kind of the one military point that the U.S. was holding out on the western frontier. And then when this whiskey rebellion started, it was you know, a lot of it took place in that region. And the to pick up that, that story again, so the feds, you know, federal government needs money. And sorry, I have to thank George. Yeah, thanks, George. Good yes. call. And I'm going to carry on with this story. And your hometown, your rebellious hometown, plays a part in it. So good to have you join us. So what happens is that this is, you know, right around 1790, and the Revolutionary War has ended only 7 years earlier, 1783. And the federal government says, you know, we are deeply in debt. How are we going to, like, pay for this, you know, baby nation we're creating? And one way they do it is they sell Western lands to the veterans who fought in the war, or they give Western lands, meaning out towards Pittsburgh, the Ohio Valley. And but the settlers out there are taking their corn and they're distilling it by them, you know, privately into whiskey, and then sending it back over the mountains to the market, you know, to the East Coast. And guys like Hamilton, you know, look around and say, like, okay, where can we get some tax revenue? And it occurs to these the founding fathers, basically, hey, there's all that whiskey coming in from the Western frontier. Maybe we should put a tax on that.
That'll be popular.
That'll be popular. You know, yeah, it's kind of, what were they thinking? but maybe they were thinking, well, you know, we just had an army of, you know, several thousand people, and we beat the British, and, you know, if there's any issue out there, we can handle it. So then what happens is there is an issue out there, and there's a literal, you know, whiskey rebellion, and the settlers and the distillers refuse to pay this tax, and anyone who goes out there and tries to gather it, his life is in imminent danger. And I mean, they have to, like, fort up in these fortified houses when the revenuers do, once people figure out who they are, and so it's a very tense situation. And, you know, shots are fired. Some people are killed. There wasn't a whole lot of killing, but it was a real tinderbox.
So let's pick this up because I know we need to go to a break here.
You bet.
And we have this conversation.
Ed and Nancy is back with another comment as well. And the phone lines are open. If you want to join the conversation, we'll be here till 10 o'clock. So give us a call, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks so much for joining us here on Talk Back Statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. On Talk Back. Glad to have you along, ladies and gentlemen. The Montana World Affairs Council, Bob Seidenschwartz here in the studio with special guest Peter Stark, adventure historian and author. And folks have been waiting on the phone to visit with you. And if Ed is up next. Ed, good morning. You're on.
Okay. We lived 4 years in rural Georgia, and there was moonshine everywhere. Our neighbor would have a Christmas Eve party and served it on the side there. But there was an ad in the newspaper that said $100 reward for those who built the still on my home place. Judge Irwin Sibley.
those moonshiners have a great sense of humor.
Yeah,
or the judge is trying to rein them in too.
I could go on and on about the moonshine business. Surveyors would have to be very careful because they'd go through the woods and there might be an active still, you know, doing the distillation
right
there. And they know.
Well, it's interesting. So, you lived in Georgia, and it's widespread down there as well as we're talking up in, you know, in Pennsylvania. And it just goes to show how widespread this cultural and economic phenomena was. That's amazing.
Well, and if you want to draw a modern day equivalent, if you're in Northern California, parts of Oregon and Montana, they're growing a leafy substance of which you have to sometimes be quite careful about who you stumble upon, because it's big business.
It's big.
Well, there's massive amounts of money that are being made.
And especially when it was illegal across the whole country.
Right.
I mean, I've heard stories about Northern California. Like, you
have to be
really careful when you go in certain sections.
Hikers beware.
Thanks for the call, Ed.
Thanks for the call, Ed. We appreciate it. Let's get Nancy back on. Nancy, go ahead, please.
Good morning.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah, just continuing the conversation. I'm so fascinated by this. I can't let it go. I just want to say that, you know, some of the recipes that are still followed today are centuries old, and they are traditional, yes. And if you remember the Waltons show, their neighbors were the sisters, and the sisters kept talking about father's recipe.
That's right.
And of course, this is moonshine.
Okay.
Moonshine. And, Bob, you know, you don't have to worry about health problems. You drink some of this shine, and that cures anything, boy. I just want you to just knock it right
out
of you.
Okay, you're a true hill country girl.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lewis and Clark, John Collins, one of the young Corps members, he found a way to make beer. On the trail, he took camas root and the fresh mountain water, and he would ferment this, and it made a brew. And Captain Clark liked to drink beer too. But in the journals, you'll hear them talking about this. And you know, talking about the Corps, Patrick Gass, he was the master carpenter on that expedition. He was almost 99 when he died. He got married at the age of 60 to a 22-year-old woman, which was normal in those days. He fathered 6 kids. He settled in the chimney of West Virginia. And every day, his youngest daughter, Rachel, wrote about her dad after his death and said every day he would walk to the local tavern 4 miles, drink 2 tumblers of beer, and walk back home. So I'm telling you, beer is a secret. You want to live a good old life, drink whiskey and beer. That's the way to do it.
Well, I'm definitely on board with the beer and, you know, occasional whiskey, but the beer, yes. So thanks for the call.
Thanks.
That's really interesting about Lewis and Clark. That's good reading of the journals, and I don't know them in that detail, but I do know that,
a Traveler's Rest right down the road here.
Like it was an early brewery.
But I
do know a lot of these expeditions. Started, you know, British or whomever, going, you know, into wilderness locales, started with you know, their grog, and then it ran out eventually. But there was a lot of ingenuity that went into, like, how to make more out of local ingredients, how to brew, essentially what Nancy was saying about making beer out of just what was around.
So I got a question for you. We're really kind of talking about Europeans coming over and bringing their culture and their brewing techniques. Native Americans were across the entire depth and breadth of the country.
Exactly.
But you don't hear about Native Americans and brewing.
No.
Or you don't hear about them. And I'm sure their shamans and various peoples understood certain roots which would bring on hallucinogenic types of visions, which was common. But you don't ever hear the stories of alcohol.
Well, you know, in a way, it's not exactly a cultural parallel, but, you know, in a social setting or a ritual setting, to kind of go to a different plane with a substance, the Indians used tobacco. I mean, that was a really important part of their culture. And, you know, I don't know enough about it, but that I think, because I have read accounts when you know, the Columbus and company first got to the Caribbean islands, they were recording, like, wow, these people get really messed up smoking these leaves. And it was tobacco. And so, you know, at least some of the native societies took it really seriously.
Regular tobacco. We're not talking about wacky tobacco.
We're talking about, just regular tobacco.
So what does that really ultimately say about who we are as a species?
Yeah.
From Aborigine to the courts in Europe, we needed to do something to put us in a different state.
Exactly.
And for different reasons.
And for, yeah.
For social, for who knows.
Well, a lot of it is ritualistic,
right.
too.
Right.
I mean, you even think about, Catholic Mass and the blood and body of Christ, the bread and the wine. And that, mm-hmm.
Right.
you talk about that, that goes back to the deepest origins of civilization and agriculture in the Middle East.
You bet. We are up against another break. I'm going to ask Rick, if you don't mind hanging on. And by the way, all of our other phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment, this is a great conversation. We'd love to have you be a part of it. Peter Stark, our adventure historian and author, and of course, Bob Seidenschwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council here in the studio, helping to guide the conversation. But hey, we've got Rick, we've got George, all sorts of folks, and we'd love to have you. There are still several phone lines open at 406-721-1290 and 1-800-568-5309. Again, I'm anxious to hear about any new books you might be writing. And we'll talk about that toward the end of the show. But Peter Stark is with us, Bob Seidenschwartz, and you right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Hey, think about the beach. Hey, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday edition of Talk Back, the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio with Bob Seidenschwartz and his special guest, Peter Stark, adventure historian and author. And Rick has been waiting. Rick, good morning. You're on the conversation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, this is a conversation that makes me sort of nostalgic. My father was raised during the Great Depression in Virginia, and they lived off the land. They had a large farm, either tobacco farming, logging, and distilling whiskey.
That's quality goes right control back to their laws. Origins. Keep talking. Cool.
Quality control laws for beers go back to the 1500s in Bavaria. And Scotch and Irish monks were the distillers of Europe. My dad always talked about his grandfather's recipe and how they would sweeten the whiskey with rock candy. But he also talked about there was nothing better than good whiskey, and there was nothing worse than bad whiskey. And bad whiskey could kill a person. And he said the repercussions of somebody selling bad whiskey could be very, very deadly for both parties.
Do you have any
stories of repercussions of people cutting corners and selling bad whiskey and blinding people or killing people? Do you have any stories of that?
No, I don't specifically. I just remember in, I don't know, high school chemistry, you know, hearing about distilling alcohol, and you have to really know what you're doing because I hope I get this right, that you want to be distilling grain alcohol, I believe, and you don't want to be still distilling wood alcohol. Something, there's some difference. There's a different name. It's really a different substance. But one of them, I think, is the wood alcohol. It's the one that can blind you. And it's bad.
Yeah, I know that. My father always had a distrust of the feds, whether they be the fish and game or what he would call the Gestapo when he'd see the state police. And that goes back to
the revenuers.
Yeah, that goes back to his time in the Great Depression, because for them it was a matter of just living.
That's survival.
That's how they lived. That's how they wouldn't always sell whiskey for money. A lot of times it was trade and goods. It's hard to believe that in the early 1900s that the United States was still in parts of the country were still living by that code of trading and selling, and the government, leave us alone. Yeah,
right.
Be damned the government, leave us alone. And I'm interested in this whole concept because, and my dad was known to be a distiller in Oregon at one time, and he was shut down by the feds.
Oh, Oh, wow.
But was never sent away to prison. His partner was from Oklahoma, and he was actually spent a time in the Oklahoma State Prison for distilling. But it's an interesting topic. Thank you.
Thank you for the call,
sir. Rick. And that really touches exactly what we're talking about, and where I'm going with this story of the Whiskey Rebellion. That sense of independence of those people on the frontier, you know, it's essentially saying, we came out here and we forged a life. You know, of course, the Indian tribes at that point had either been moved out or you know, the things had mostly been settled by that time. But they, the settlers say, you know, here we are, we're, you know, like we carved a living out of the wilderness. And we, you know, the federal government, no one helped us. We did it ourselves, which is not quite true because they got all this cheap land, which was a lot of people helped them get that. But to, in terms of like the hands-on creating a life in the wilderness, they did. And they, yes, they, this independent streak is so pronounced, and that we don't need a government oversight. And, you know, this is so true today. And I think a lot of it is part of it goes back to that Scotch-Irish strain. And these are border people who resist the English. You know, they're always resisting the English in Scotland and in Ireland. And it also happens that Scotland and Ireland have really good distilling arts. And so when the Scotch-Irish moved to the Appalachian wilderness, it was like, well, this is what we got, you know, a skill.
We already know how to do this. We don't have to be taught, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. We're about a minute away from a break, and when we come back, George is waiting to visit with us. We're going to come right back. Actually, it might be Nancy. It'll be George? Okay, when we come back, we'll get George on the phone. And by the way, we're coming up on the end of our first hour of the Montana World Affairs Council, and our special guest here in the studio, as you've been hearing, Peter Stark, adventure historian and author, and we are definitely looking forward to hearing about what you're, hopefully before the end of the show, we'll have a chance to talk about some of the things you're working on, because that's
we can get there.
Always fascinating. All right. So, but right now, just the important thing is we've got phone lines to fill up. If you have a question or a comment for Peter Stark or Bob Seiden-Schwartz with the Montana World Affairs Council, hey, just pick up the phone, give us a call, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And of course, we're going to continue talking about this great topic when we come back. We'll drink to that, right? We're going to come right back.
Whiskey and Rebellion.
Thank you. The Statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Welcome back, everybody. Yes, indeed. Hour number two of TalkBack is underway. The Montana World Affairs Council. Bob Seiden-Schwartz is our host, and his guest, Peter Stark, adventure historian and author. So let us continue now. We have had a caller. Go ahead, please, Bob.
Just, you know, as that kind of prelude in with, you know, thoughts and opinions,
right.
I just want to say that we are sensitive, that we realize there's a dark side to this, too. I'd be shocked that there's not a family out there that has not been affected
right.
to different degrees because of alcohol and drugs. So we're not making light of that. We're just really talking about the confluence of what we are as human beings, as a society. This has been a part of who we have been since we crawled out of the slime. So just a quick comment and to our caller, Peter.
And history is real. So let's get George on the line. George, thanks for holding through the break, sir. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thanks for having me on again. I'm trying not to get political here, but I can't help myself, I guess. But taxes and tariffs, you know, and what's going on today, you know, I just heard that speech by the premier of Ontario. And when I lived in Pittsburgh, our family used to go up to Ontario for the summer. you know, north of Toronto there, and visit these lakes. It was really cool, and it helped set the trajectory of my life. But I heard the premier, Ontario, give a speech regarding the tariffs, and those folks are a little bit, I don't know what the word is, pissed off regarding what's going on there. But history is so important, and thank you for having an historian on there. I kind of wish some of our leaders would read more history.
Or just read.
Right. And, because we're such a digital world, I insist on, my brother likes the digital books, but I like paper still, you know.
Well, George, that's great. I'm so appreciate that your love of history and your, you know, obviously deep understanding how history informs, you know, where we are and who we are today, and that it brings a whole lot more depth and perspective to any modern political conversation or any, you know, modern perspective. And so, I really appreciate what you're saying. So
I'm not sure if it was you or Stephen Ambrose that mentioned the building of the Lewis and Clark boat in Pittsburgh. And it was behind schedule because the boat builder was drunk too much, but they finally got it finished and then headed on down the Ohio, and then eventually to the Missouri,
and then the rest is history.
You know, right. But anyway,
so George, I'm going to tell you a quick little story. My uncle George, who is now departed, was a well-known gunsmith throughout the United States, and George never quite got to the level of making the kind of income he wanted, because it took him sometimes a year to make a black powder rifle because George liked to tip it. So there's all sorts of stories of some great craftsmen and people who probably didn't finish things for various reasons. Right. But he built a Civil War replica canyon.
Thank you, George.
Wow.
That, I mean, this is stunning. And on the 4th of July, George would get together with his buddies, drink some liquor that they had made, and fired this cannon off in Tennessee. So, you know,
cool.
He always thought himself a frontiersman, but all have family stories, don't we?
We do. Yeah. I have a cannon 4th of July story, but I'll spare it for now.
Sure.
It's a really great one.
Well,
When we
come back from the break, we'll be more than happy to get it from you.
We got to finish the whiskey rebellion.
Yeah, don't leave whiskey undrank.
On the shelf.
Unimbibed. So, by the way, the phone lines are open. And if you have a question for Peter Stark, our adventure historian and author, of course, Bob Seidenschwartz here with the Montana World Affairs Council, we'd love to have you be a part of it. 406-721-1290 is our number. We're coming right back after this.
Busy.
Dennis Bragg with the Town Square weather. A slight chance of rain between noon and 3 today. A 20% chance. Those could include thunderstorms after 3. Areas of smoke at times too. Mostly sunny with highs between 90 to 95 degrees. Light and variable winds. A chance of precipitation about 20% continuing through the evening with overnight lows in the 50s. Thursday's forecast, a nearly identical repeat of that. Skies will clear Thursday night. Friday looks pretty good with sunshine and highs in the low to mid 80s. A slight chance of shower Saturday. Sun on Sunday.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be. Find resources to help you support your kids and their emotional well-being at soundedouttogether.org. That's soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal.
This is Talk Back. Glad to have you along, everybody. Hour number 2 underway. Of course, it's the Montana World Affairs Council with Bob Seidenschwartz and adventure historian and author Peter Stark here in the studio with us this morning. And shall we let go? Yeah, go ahead, please.
First, we're going to wrap up the whiskey rebellion.
Yes.
Some of the outcomes and implications of this. And now we're going to move into a topic that may at the moment seem contrary to this discussion, but actually is very relevant. So wrap it up for us, historian Peter Stark.
Okay, adventure historian.
Oh, I'm sorry, adventure historian, all-around good guy, Peter Stark.
You know, I travel with the moonshiners on the back roads. That's okay.
Right.
I wish
Your next book.
Yeah, that would be fun to try to do. So, yeah, so we're talking about the Whiskey Rebellion, the settlers, independent Scotch-Irish, out in the frontier, creating their farms from the, you know, so-called wilderness, growing corn, can't do anything with it. It's because they're so far away from any market. So they distill it into whiskey and sell it. And at this time, the U.S., about 1790, has just finished the Revolutionary War. The U.S. is really like a baby nation trying to figure its way. And it doesn't have any money. And so it starts looking around, where are we going to get some money to pay our debts and just to keep this whole experiment running? And, you know, it occurs to the, I think especially the guys out there on the East Coast, probably, you know, the Philadelphia guys think, oh, yeah, way over there on the other side of the mountains, these people are making all this whiskey and selling it for a lot of money. In fact, maybe the founders were drinking the stuff and they had to pay. But so the founders, you know, and they start saying, okay, we're going to put a tax on whiskey. The settlers say, no, we're not paying the tax. The feds send out tax agents to collect the tax, and the tax agents come under a lot of strife and violence. And in one instance, a guy has to hole up in a fort while this angry mob is out there trying to get him. And
probably drunk,
maybe, yeah, maybe. And then, so George Washington is president. He's only been president a few years. And he decides something has to be done about this. You know, this is the baby nation. It's trying to figure out how it works. You know, are the states more important, like Pennsylvania? Is the federal government more important? You know, are we letting Pennsylvania go its own way?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these people, some of them wanted, these people, the settlers, wanted to split off as a different country or join Spain or Britain. And, you know, you can imagine that didn't fly in Philadelphia. And so Washington puts together an army of militia. You know, these are sort of National Guard.
There was five different states that sent militia at the order of the governors. So
called out the militia, and I, you know, I was just reading about this morning, kind of the details. This is one I didn't realize that at that time, that the law was, you could only call out that, like, the president could only call out the militia if one of the Supreme Court justices said that it was valid to do so. Which is, I'd never heard that, and I assume it's right. But so anyway, Washington calls out the militia, and there's something like 12 or 13,000
mm-hmm.
troops. And he starts marching toward western Pennsylvania, you know, with a serious army. And, you know, this dude's been fighting for like 40 years. He really knows what he's doing.
And, Peter, they had to make sure that they had enough alcohol.
I'm sure.
True story. Okay. To supply this militia of 12, 13,000 men. Or very likely they would have stopped dead in their tracks.
They'd stop marching.
To demand something of consequence. So the story is, I'm taking the taxation from your alcohol, but I got to pay these guys in alcohol to make sure they go take the taxes from the guys with the alcohol.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
Alcohol, in a way, it was sort of a currency of the frontier. And so, in whiskey, home distilled. And so this big army led by Washington, and apparently I think it's the only time a sitting U.S. president has led an army personally, mm-hmm. you know, into battle, that Washington gets partway out there. It looks like the mob is getting intimidated. Washington, you know, eventually says, okay, I don't think I have to be at the head, even though he was at the head of the beginning. I think he has light horse Harry Lee, revolutionary hero, lead this army. And they get out and they suppress this rebellion. I mean, there's no way these settlers are going to stand up to this army. And, you know, but a lot of them run, they hide, And then some are brought to justice and for rebelling against the United States. And this is, you know, this is a key moment in the history of the United States. We've got these people who want to split off. They want to do their own thing, yet they're part of the United States. What are we going to do? So it's a key decision for Washington and everybody involved. So the feeling is they need to be punished, these rebellious people. So it's something like, I don't know, a couple of dozen of the rebels, the whiskey rebels, are captured, and they're charged with treason, and, you know, big charge. And it said, I think it says about 10 stood trial for treason, mm-hmm. and of those 10, only 2 were convicted. I mean, this is out of probably thousands of rebels. 2 ended up being convicted, and they were sentenced to be hung, or hanged, I should say. They were sentenced to be hanged for treason. And this would stand as an example for all history, for all time. You know, you don't mess with the United States and think you're going to split off from it. Don't engage in an armed rebellion against the United States, or you're going to be hanged for
treason.
We
had to send a message.
We had to send a message. And then, just wrapping this up, Washington pardoned those 2 guys who were going to be hanged for treason. And this is what he said. "The misled have abandoned their errors," he stated. "For though I shall..." Oh, we have a break?
We're going to finish that quote when we come back.
So okay.
Stay with us.
Washington's still talking.
That's right. We'll be right back after this.
Montana State News Network.
Sound of scooper planes hitting the waters of Lake Como and the Bitterroot yesterday as they flew missions over the latest fires burning on the Bitterroot National Forest. The newest fire, the Nature Grove fire that started over the weekend, continues to burn southwest of Hamilton near the Skalkahoe Highway. Latest estimates place it at 300 acres, with evacuations remaining in place as crews attempt to keep the fire manageable. A community meeting is scheduled for Thursday night at 7 p.m. in the Rocky Mountain Grange in Hamilton. A new crew, the Northern Rockies One team, has taken over on the Sand Creek fire and is expected to continue working to reinforce control lines on that 33,000-acre blaze. That team is also managing the Bobcat Lakes fire to the north and the Moose fire in the southern Sapphire Range. The NRC crew is continuing to work the 900-acre Deer Creek fire burning west of Kalispell. They report good progress building fire lines in the cooler weather. Missoula County Commissioners enacting that policy for controlling a herd of feral horses that have taken to freely wandering through one of the city's largest neighborhoods. The new policy includes the option of working with the Department of Livestock, which has primary jurisdiction in the future. Commissioners Josh Slotnick and Juanita Vero thank residents for coming together to provide input and form a group to help with future management and education.
I love that people care about their neighborhood and care about where they live and want to get involved. And I feel like to a person, everyone spoke in good faith and really spoke their heart, and I appreciated that people were willing to roll up their sleeves and do some work and compromise and go back and forth, and I think this is how local government should be.
I mean, this has been going on for years, and we've heard issues for over 2 years, and so I know people are frustrated about how long it took to get here, but the process and we got to a place where everyone feels good about it.
The horses have been in the area since being released in the 1970s. This is the Montana State News Network.
Hi, I'm Montana Highway Patrol Colonel Kurt Seger, encouraging you to stay safe on the road this summer. More fatalities occur on the road from Memorial Day to Labor Day. To ensure Montanans and our visitors get to and from their destinations safely this summer, Montana Highway Patrol troopers will be increasing patrols. You can help. Never get behind the wheel intoxicated, follow the speed limit, and always buckle up. Together we can save lives. Sponsored by the Montana Department of Justice.
Montana's future is on the line. Will you stand up and fight? Montana was built on hard work, strong families, and economic freedom. Americans for Prosperity is building a grassroots movement, and we need you to help lead the charge. Our wages are among the lowest in the nation. Our children rank near the bottom in math and reading. Home ownership is becoming an out-of-reach dream for many, while government interference and radical regulations strangle our industries. Join us today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
After I read the...
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back, everybody. All right, we are rocking right along with the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz hosting and Peter Stark, adventure historian and author, here in the studio. So let's go. You had a point you wanted to make.
So to wrap up the Whiskey Rebellion story, after Washington sent an army to break it up, and eventually only two guys were convicted of treason, and they were sentenced to be hanged. And then Washington decided to pardon them. And here's what he said. The misled have abandoned their errors. For though I shall always think it a sacred duty to exercise with firmness and energy the constitutional powers with which I am vested, yet it appears to me no less consistent with the public good than it is with my personal feelings to mingle in the operations of government every degree of moderation and tenderness which the national justice, dignity, and safety may permit.
A tension that existed. I can only imagine the conversations that went on behind the scenes about what we had to do and why we had to do that with this very early government trying to keep itself together.
I mean, this is Washington knew this. He knew this was going to be watched for the ages, assuming the nation
and
lasted.
And that story has continued so to the very day.
Moderation and tenderness,
yeah.
Which is, it's wild to hear that.
Yeah.
And that as long as, you know, we can, as long as we can keep national dignity and justice and safety, but let's. If
and
we
respecting
can,
individual
let's
rights.
Do it with moderation and tenderness. Yeah. So I think that's a key quote.
Moderation and tenderness.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, you don't often hear that in the political talk.
They spoke a different way. They had a little bit more eloquent while hammering you with a rifle butt.
Let's get Frank from Evergreen. He's been waiting. Frank, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Yeah, on the history of Scotland and Ireland, I know this when I traveled to both those countries. They still have antiquated plumbing of copper pipes, lead pipes. A lot of people could just have to drink a bottle of water from places like Costco, Kmart, and places like that. And it's, you know, back in the refining, I mean, during the distilling process, they were messing around with poisons. It wasn't very healthy at all. When Scotch was first invented, they called it life water. It was a mixture of spring water with the barley. Then you age it for about 3 years in a wooden cask. But that was all, you know, taxed eventually. And today's date, I was just looking it up, 60-year-old Scotch bottles going for $500,000.
well, there you go.
There is more money in not raising wheat to feed people and just make more drunks. And no, it's a weird tradition. But perhaps in the days of Christopher Columbus, if they had like a Mothers Against Mad Mariners or something, you know, Christopher Columbus, you know, with, you know.
He's you know, weaving
he
out
was
in
drunk
the bay
all the way.
Again. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for the comment,
thanks
George.
For the call.
So let's wrap up the Whiskey Rebellion. And Bob, what give
yeah,
me your thoughts?
You know, it just really strikes me how the tensions have always existed. We're developing a new nation. We're having to come up ways to cooperate, and yet we still have to maintain a firm hand if we're going to take this nation from its origin to some type of, you know, organizational completion. And it really strikes me that when I think about these early frontiersmen, whence and where they came from, this also shifts down into the southern part of the country, where the industrial part is in the northern areas, different people coming in, different lifestyles, but the South is still a very rural place, and I wonder how much of what happened in the early days spills over into the ultimate display of dissatisfaction for different reasons, the Civil War.
The Civil War, yeah, exactly. And, I mean, here it is, that tension between the central government and the state's individual rights, and that's it's really built into this country, and it will always exist.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have a caller on the line. It's Harry. Harry, good morning. You're on with Peter and Bob. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just a quick comment. It's kind of interesting. I know Peter has talked about one of our major exports at that time was tobacco and whiskey, so we were pretty much a drug cartel. I mean, we were pushing drugs on the world. And also, it seems like we've keep the tradition going, though. I mean, one of our favorite pastimes is complaining about taxes and getting drunk. So,
okay, that really, you really go have tied it up full circle,
Harry,
culturally.
He
so,
cut
thanks
right
so much. Thanks so much, Harry. Yeah, brilliant observation.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. All right.
So we're gonna. I'm gonna shift things. Just do we have another caller, Peter?
We have a break coming up here in about 30 seconds, so we're going to continue. Go ahead.
29, 28, 27. We're going to move just a little bit to a different part of the world, but a parallel to our conversation right now. So when we come back, I'll introduce that for your insight and expertise.
Okay.
All right, here we go. And again, the phone lines will be open no matter what topic we're talking about with Peter Stark, adventure historian, joining us here in the studio. Again, you're listening to the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio. Bob Seidenschwartz hosting our friend Peter Stark, and we appreciate it. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout, so please stay with us. Hey, if you're waking up.
No matter who we call family, when we choose to get the flu shot, we're protecting them. That's especially true for those who are 65 and older and people with chronic conditions like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. Getting a flu shot every year decreases your chances of getting the flu. If you do get the flu, the vaccine makes you less likely to be hospitalized or die from it. Protect yourself and the ones you love by getting your flu shot. Learn more at heart.org/flu.
Hi, I'm Priscilla Presley. My love for animals began when I was 5 years old. That sparked a lifelong commitment to speak up for animals who can't speak for themselves. Elvis and I supported American Humane Society because your compassion can change a life. American Humane Society strengthens the bond between humans and animals. Please visit AmericanHumane.org to learn more. Thank you.
Hey, we're back on Talk Back, and a great conversation underway right now with Bob Seidenschwartz and the Montana World Affairs Council and his guest, Peter Stark, adventure historian and author. So, gentlemen, let's pick up the conversation where we left off. Please go ahead.
Peter, thank you very much for that first hour and a half. Great insights and conversation. We're going to move this slightly to another part of the world, and this is the Middle East and Iran. You and I were talking yesterday about how important culture is in terms of how a people sees themselves. And when you have a war that's taking place right now, there's a multitude of issues that go into ultimately an unknown what this is going to look like in the weeks and months and actually years ahead. Once we've started down this course, I don't have the hubris to say, oh, I know a year from now, this is how it may look. You've been in Iran. You were there at a very interesting time at the beginning of the revolution. You were backpacking through there, as many Americans and European kids were. So you've got some insights to share about what may be something that sometimes is missing from the discussions that take place before decisions are made that really involve not just the region, but its effect on the rest of the world. So take it away.
So thanks for that introduction. And, you know, this is such a broad topic that we can take it any number of ways. But I think what really got me thinking about this, about Iran and this Iran war, is my own experience there as a backpacker in 1974 and 1975. And, you know, it's this is a people who have been there for thousands of years. The Persian Empire goes back to 500 BC. And so there's a very distinct identity of this part of the world that was once this huge empire. You know, it's been many different empires, but under the Persian Empire, it extended from India all the way to Greece. I mean, that's thousands of miles and probably hundreds of tribute states. And it was consolidated under a famous emperor, Darius the Great. And this empire was so sophisticated, it had a royal road that went, I think it was basically from the Persian Gulf to Greece, which is like almost 2,000 miles. And they could send a message along that road in 9 days. And so it was, you know, really sophisticated in its communications, in its culture and arts and trade, very powerful as a military entity. And so when we're in this Iran war today, I think it's really easy, I think, for Americans to sort of objectify Iran as this kind of pop-up nation that's standing up to the United States and has been a big, you know, pain, thorn in the side for, you know, some decades. But there's so much deeper history to who the Iranian people are. And I think it's really easy to think that they're not really like people there. They're, you know, they're our enemy. But Iran is full of wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people, the vast majority. And these are nice people. They're kind people. They're generous people. The leadership, you know, that's a whole different subject.
They're an abomination. We want to be very clear that the Revolutionary Guard, the mullahs, and what took place after the revolution led to a country that was very outward-looking, that became very inward.
Inward-looking.
And slaughter of its own people, its blight upon the region, we don't dismiss. So just for the record,
everything I'm saying is totally acknowledging that this is a cruel regime currently in Iran that has to go, and however that happens. But the people themselves, I mean, I think we really have to bear in mind that these are people who are just like us, but they also have a culture that's rooted 2,500 years in the past. And so they are an entity, and they're a proud entity. Right. And I think that's really important to keep in mind when we're saying, you know, okay, we're going to go bomb Iran. It's so simple to say, and yet the consequences are so major, and there's so much more depth to what it means simply to bomb Iran.
You bet. And, of course, we have Mehrdad Kia here on the studio, who is Persian and a professor at the University of Montana. And he loves to share about his country and his love for his country and the culture and the history. But you know, he's been a guest on our show many, many times. So we're going to come right back. The phone lines are open, by the way. If you have a question for Peter Stark, give us a call, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We're coming right back after this quick timeout.
I'll tell that story.
Thinking about building or
being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down. A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
but it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
All right. We are rocking right along with the Montana World Affairs Council, Bob Seidenschwartz, here in the studio with us, along with his special guest, Peter Stark, adventure historian and author. And we do have a caller on the line who wants to weigh in. Brian, good morning. You're on with Bob and Peter. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was hoping you could elaborate on this comment. I've done a lot of traveling through Central and South America, and particularly South America. You'll find a lot of history on the introduction of beer by the Nazis, and basically that's how Central and South American learned how to make beer.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. I mean, it makes sense that there were a lot of German and European immigrants who knew how to make beer, and I'm sure some of them were Nazis, and I assume some of them were not. But yeah, that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
After World War II. We had people coming out of World War II, some of the Nazis, I think he's referencing, that come to Argentina and places. Yeah. And they didn't forget how to bring their Wiener Schnitzel and their beer.
There it goes.
And it tells a bigger story about humanity is we are traders.
Right.
We are explorers. We are refugees.
Yeah, you
we
want
are
to say
immigrants.
T-R-A-D-E-R-S. Traders.
We're traders, yeah. Well, thank you, Peter. This is just a part of this vast, and we have underestimated the amount of influence of people that have done this type of traveling throughout the world and what it brings. One of the biggest products we have right now in the world is our entertainment. The U.S. wraps the world around its entertainment.
Yeah.
So,
well, thanks for that comment, Brian.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, there's some good beer in South America. I've had some of it.
So. Modelo. Well, that's Central America.
Brazil, we lived a year. I tried them all.
You tried them all.
We have another caller on the line. It's Perry. Perry, good morning. You're on with Peter and Bob. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. I want to paraphrase George Santayana, and I'm glad you guys are talking about history because, those who do not remember it are doomed to repeat it, or those who do not learn from it are doomed to repeat it. And we have a bit of history. Iran has a lot of history and a lot of good people. You're absolutely correct, just like the Chinese people. But the Communist Party in China and the ruling mullahs in Iran are not of their people. They are over the people as masters and lords and executioners, and we have to understand that they aren't really in control of their own country because they let their government disarm them and take control of everything. I remember in 1979 when the Islamists took over the government in Iran. Tehran was a cosmopolitan city. The Iranian people were one of the most forward-looking nations in the Middle East, certainly better than Saudi Arabia. And this is what happens when you let the government go too far and take over your entire life.
Yeah, well, thanks for that comment, Perry. And yeah, that fits in just with what we're saying. That the regime in Iran and China as well, and Iran is such a dramatic example. It's oppressing its people in every possible way. So it seems that I have to tell a story about pre-revolution Iran. So I was going to college and I was having a bad year, and I said I'm out of here. And I said, I just want to go to the most remote part of the world I can find and kind of think things over. So I decided to head towards the Himalayas. And at that point, there was what was called the hippie trail, that you could actually go overland from Istanbul, you know, which is towards the eastern end of the Mediterranean, all the way to India, overland, by taking trains, buses, you know, various modes of transportation. And so I went through Iran in the fall of 1974. And this was when the Shah was in power. And, you know, it was at sort of at the height of the Shah's power and his regime. He was very Western. He was very friendly towards the West. Yes, the country was modernizing and it was, you know, progressive and forward looking in so many ways. But there was a whole other dimension to it too. So I came through Tehran in the fall of 1974. And what really struck me is how there was it was like a main boulevard running through town. And to the south of it, you know, the buildings were dingy and slum-like and just kind of everything gritty. And then on the north side of the town, of that boulevard, there were literally just marble mansion after marble mansion and beautiful green gardens and trees. And it was such a dichotomy between the rich and the poor in that version of Iran. That had a lot to do with the revolution. I mean, that was one of the big causes of the revolution, in my understanding. And the other thing, part of this, was that I was walking down the street one day, and this Iranian guy, taps me on the shoulder, and he says, "The police inspector wants to talk to you." And I'm like, "What's going on there?" And he's right upstairs. "No, you know, no worries. He just wants to practice his English." You know, I was, as hippies go, I was pretty clean cut, you know, and college boy and whatnot. And so I go up and there's the, you know, like the police inspector. And, you know, he's this nice guy. His English is very good. And he's friendly. And then he says at one point in the conversation, "Well, in your travels, we'd be really interested in knowing what you're seeing." And so, okay. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, whatever. And, you know, we kind of leave it at that. So then a day or two later, I go to the U.S. Embassy to get a visa. And you know, I'm a clean-cut college guy. And I'm getting my visa, and I'm called to the back office. And there's this, you know, young guy who's a diplomat. And he says to me, "Hey, well, you're going on all these travels. If you see anything out there, we might be interested and let us know." And Peter
was never heard from again.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the other thing was, if you talked about, okay, here we go.
We're up against a break. We're going to come right back. We have Jeff waiting and other phone lines. Only about 8 minutes left in our time together. We'll be right back with more Talk Back with adventurous historian Peter Stark and Bob Seidenschwartz after this.
On America's darkest day, 9/11, our nation vowed to never forget. Let's keep that promise through education, remembrance, and honoring America's heroes and the families they leave behind. Head to T2T.org to learn more.
We are back on Talk Back. Into our final segment now with the Montana World Affairs Council on the radio with Bob Seidenschwartz. And adventure historian Peter Stark is here in the studio this morning. And we have, you want to finish what your stories? You want to go to calls?
I'll finish this quick anecdote, and then Bob's going to wrap up our Persian-Iranian section, and then we'll go to calls.
Okay.
So, and speed me along if need be.
That's okay. Go ahead. Okay. We have 6 minutes.
Okay. Oh, no problem. So I was talking about my backpacking trip through Iran. 1974, I went east through Iran. In 1975, I went west back towards Istanbul through Iran. And on one of those visits, I think it was the first one, I had a college friend who had gone there, graduated, I think, had gone there to teach English in Tehran. And we went out for beers and, you know, and sort of, I don't know, it was kind of a, bistro bar. And he had a few other friends with him, Westerners. And I think I was one who brought up the Shah. And you know, I was going to say, like, what's this guy doing to his people? And they said to me, do not say a word about the Shah. His secret police, Savak, is listening to us right now. And so that's the atmosphere these people were living in under the Shah. So it was not all like roses under the Shah. You know, the country was westernizing, modernizing, but it was a very, very repressive regime when it came to speech and political discourse.
So we trade one repressive regime for another. And as you pointed out earlier, these are people that have the same desires, wants that we do.
Right.
They are very outward looking, very educated. And the importance of having cultural understanding when you're a diplomat or making decisions politically that are going to have an effect is so critical and often, I think, not appreciated to the degree that it needs to. And that's part of what we're bringing this up as we're telling our stories earlier, kind of wrapping this up. There's a lot that we still need to learn if we want to be more effective with our outcomes.
Well, and I have to say that when the revolution did happen 4 or 5 years after I was there, you know, I was thinking, if I were in Iran, you know, if I were an Iranian, I think I'd be joining that revolution because it was so oppressive under the Shah.
The glory of the moment replaced by the oppression of today.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let's get Jeff on the line. Jeff, good morning. You're back. Go ahead, please.
Hey, really quickly, when I was hearing the story about the main boulevard of Tehran, I couldn't help but think, and pardon me, but what a stark difference.
Yeah, that's the word for sure. It is. Yeah, I mean that's the word I use. It's really it was a stark difference.
Very good, Jeff.
But between you know rich and poor, between the wealthy part of Tehran and the poor part, and you know it was just it was so clear the schism of that ran down that society in terms of wealth and income and right. Being on the inside or outside. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, an earlier caller mentioned the dark side of alcohol, and it has affected my family, too. I can see the effects of my great-grandparents and my great-grandchildren. Yeah. And growing up, I always thought that the temperance movement was just a bunch of busy-bodied women who didn't have anything else to do and just wanted to make society better. But it strikes me more as I get older that they were people whose lives had been devastated by alcohol in one way or another, and they could see the dark side, and they were trying to help people, not hinder. And so they have that constant tension of temperance and imbibing, and it's still here today. It's not going to go away, but it just it gave them more credibility for me.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Thanks for the comment. We have 2 minutes, gentlemen.
Okay. I mean, that, just to Jeff's point that – you know, there was so much whiskey drinking back then, you know, with the early days of the country that, you know, in a way it was almost like the opioid crisis that we've had today. And I think that it was just everywhere and in large amounts. So anyway, thanks for the comment, Jeff.
Peter, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Bob, thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. Great conversation.
Okay. And Mr. Nick, as we look forward to Thursday, what's coming up, sir?
Open phones from 8 to 8:30, and then Governor Gianforte will join us from 8:30 to 9, and then from 9 to 10, we'll have Attorney General Austin Knudsen, and joining him for the first half hour, ATF Director Rob Chiqueta will join us. He's been in the state for about a week, and we'll talk about his first trip to Montana, and then Knudsen will wrap up the last half hour, and we'll take your calls.
All right. Again, thank you so much. Thanks for all the calls, and especially a big thank you to Peter Stark. It is always a pleasure to have you on the show. The dramatic history that you bring with you is great to hear every time you're with us.
Thanks so much. I have such fun being here.
And Bob, thank you also, sir.
You're welcome, Peter.
All right. And again, a big thank you to everybody for listening this morning and our callers. You guys make it happen. We really appreciate every single one of you. So again, we hope that you will join us tomorrow for another edition of Talk Back, of course, starting at 8 o'clock. And we would love to hear from you when we get it started on that one. So again, our phone number is 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And I didn't get a chance to talk about any new books you're talking about. But next time, Peter Stark, adventure historian and author. And again, thank you to Bob Seiden-Schwartz from the Montana World Affairs Council. But most of all, thank you to you for calling in and listening here on Talk Back. And a big thank you to Nick Christensen, producing every day right back there. And we will see you tomorrow morning, bright and early at 8 o'clock, with another edition of Talk Back.